This is Jim Sklavounis of Grinder Man, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sports. There are updates. There are numbers, and numbers, there are sorrows, in sorrow, there is redemption. This is the news, this is the network, this is the news, this is the network, network, this is the news, this is the news, this is the news, this is the network, network, on air, in air. Waves controlled on air, in air, channel connection, and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into On Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Today, Monday, January 16th, and you need to check your Amtrak schedule to see what's going on there today. But the banks are closed. County offices are also closed. The federal offices are closed. The financial markets are closed. There is no Greene County Transit service today. Metro North is on enhanced Saturday schedules. There is no mail delivery today. The schools are closed and the state offices are closed. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC News Update for Monday, January 16th. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. H. Rose Schneider reports for the Times Union that the Centers for Disease Control on January 12th updated the COVID-19 community transmission levels for counties in the Hudson Valley to high. Columbia, Greene, Sullivan, Dutchess, Rockland, Putnam, Ulster, and Westchester counties all currently have high transmission levels, according to the CDC. The increase in COVID-19 cases is attributed to the new subvariant of the virus, XBB.1.5, according to a statement from Ulster County Commissioner of Health Dr. Carol Smith. Known as the Kraken subvariant, XBB.1.5 is believed to be significantly more transmissible, constituting about half of the COVID-19 cases statewide. Smith advised residents to consider wearing a mask when indoors, maintaining good ventilation and airflow in indoor spaces, and testing as soon as COVID symptoms are suspected. Quote, stay home when sick and follow the CDC's recommendations for what to do if you are exposed to someone with COVID-19, unquote, she said. Albany and Rensselaer counties currently have medium transmission levels. Schenectady, Saratoga, Washington, Warren, Hamilton, Fulton, Montgomery, Schoharie, and Delaware counties currently have low levels. The CDC COVID data tracker will resume regular updates on January 17th. In the past week, both Columbia and Greene counties each reported another death from COVID-19. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that the owners of an illegally operating tire dump on State Route 81 in Climax have until mid-February to remove all tires from the property, or town officials can take matters into their own hands. New York State Supreme Court Justice Richard Mott ruled last week that Greene Tire Recycling LLC is, quote, conditionally, unquote, in contempt of the order he issued on August 30, 2022, that permanently prohibited the company from operating the tire dump business. Property owners Corey Mergendahl and Sharon Lapman and Green Tire Recycling owner Shane Foster have ignored the August order, and thousands of tires remain piled up in alleged violation of state and local laws. Mott ruled the dump must cease operations and all tires removed by February 17th. If the parties fail to comply with the order by that date, the town of Coxsackie may, quote, immediately enter the subject parcels and remove or cause the removal of tires dumped thereat by a licensed refuse removal company or the NY State Department of Environmental Conservation to be paid for via a re-levy of the Greene County General real property taxes upon the subject premises, unquote, Mott ordered. Mott also ruled the town may impose a fine. Mergendahl, Lampoon, and Foster could not be reached for comment, and they have not retained attorneys. The Department of Environmental Conservation also ordered the dump shut down in August and imposed substantial fines on Mergendahl, Lampman, and Foster. That order, like Mott's, was ignored. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. And Jeanette Wolfberg reports for the Columbia paper that the Columbia County Board of Supervisors held its reorganizational meeting January 3rd, and Board Chair Matt Morrell set out the county's objectives for 2023. Those goals include fixing a bridge in Livingston and Claremont, upgrading the Department of Social Services building, and developing a new kitchen for the Office for the Aging. The State Department of Transportation closed the bridge in June, and work is ongoing, Morrell said. The county hopes the bridge will reopen in early 2024. Among the county's 2022 accomplishments, completion of the sewer line from Commerce Park to the Greenport Wastewater Treatment Facility on time and under budget. Completion of the P.J. Keeler Columbia County Emergency Services Response and Training Center in Commerce Park, and approval of a new contract with the four unions that represent county workers. At the reorganizational meeting, the supervisors chose Morrell as chair, Supervisor Ron Knott as majority leader, and Supervisor Trista Holtling as minority leader. Kelly C. Baccaro was named clerk of the board, and Richard Washburn, Michael Nabosny, and Robin Andrews were appointed to the County Board of Ethics. Kelly Miller Simmons was reappointed Republican Election Commissioner, and Aaron Stomper was named Democratic Election Commissioner to replace Ken Dow. Victory McGowan was named Director of Public Health to replace Jack Mabb, who retired. Morrell acknowledged Mabb for his, quote, outstanding leadership in a most difficult time, unquote. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, January 16th. Local early morning temperatures range from 20 degrees in Steventown and Medusa to 24 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 33 degrees. Snow falls 250 miles away in northern New Hampshire today. The frigid morning gives way to a cold afternoon hitting 40 degrees at 1 p.m. Winds will be stiff, so layer up and don't forget the gloves when heading out. Overnight, we dip back to 20 degrees. Then, tomorrow afternoon, we see a high of 39 and some afternoon rain with an overnight low of 34 degrees. Wednesday, high of 47 with some isolated rain possible. Thursday, widespread rain is likely, with a high of only 38. Is anyone else wondering what kind of tropical pets are now capable of surviving in upstate New York winter? Sunset today will be at 4:34 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see a coronal mass ejection is on the way, expected to just kiss the magnetosphere on Thursday. Solar wind speed is currently 499.9 kilometers per second at 11.7 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible, verging on closed until dark. Overnight isn't looking much better. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 5, storm level. The current sunspot number is 177, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We are celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday on the radio today. Tune in on the Afrosonic Taxi at 11 a.m. and at 2 p.m. a special on All Mixed Up on 90.7 FM WGXC.
We want to do a tune written for today, for this hour, for Dr. Martin Luther King. We stated before that the whole program is dedicated to his memory, but this tune is written about him and for him, and so we had yesterday to learn it, and so we'll see. Once upon this planet Earth lived a man of humble birth, preaching love and freedom for his fellow man. He was dreaming of the day peace would come to earth to stay, and he spread this message all across the land. Turn the other cheek, he'd plead. Love thy neighbor was his creed. Pain, humiliation, death, he did not dread. With his Bible at his side, from his foes he did not hide. It's hard to think that this great man is dead. Oh yeah. Well, the murders never cease. Are they men or are they beasts? What do they ever hope to gain? Will my country is it too late for us all? And did Martin Luther King just die in vain? Cause he'd seen and he knew he could not stop, always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think, cause we're headed for the brink. is dead. He was for equality for all people, you and me. Full of love and goodwill, hate was not his way. He was not a violent man. Bigotry had sealed his face. We can all shed tears, but it won't change a thing. Teach your people, will they ever learn? Must you always kill with burn and burn with guns and kill with guns and burn? Don't you know how we got to react? Don't you know what it will bring? But he had seen the mountaintop. Knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think. Everybody knows we're on the brink. Happen now that the king is dead. I'm gonna say he'd seen the mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think and feel again. For we're headed for the brink. What's gonna happen now in all of our cities? My people are rising. At that one moment that you know what life is. If you have to die, it's all right, 'cause you know what life is. You know what freedom is for one moment of your life. What's gonna happen now that the king of all kinds of stories, but I heard that this was his favorite song, at least at the near the end of his life. Last year, a year ago, maybe more longer than that now, Lorraine Hansberry left us, and she was a dear friend. And she had her favorite song, and then Langston Hughes left us, Coltrane left us, Otis Redding left us. You can go on. Do you realize how many we have lost? Then it really gets down to reality, doesn't it? Not a performance. Not microphones and all that crap. But really something else. We've lost a lot of them in the last 2 years. But we have remaining Monk, Miles. I love you too. And of course, for those that we have left, we're thankful, but we can't afford any more losses. Oh no. Oh my God. They're shooting us down one by one. Don't forget that. Because they are. Killing us one by one. Well, all I have to say is that those of us who know how to protect those of us that we love, stand by them and stay close to them. And I say that if there had been a couple of more, a little closer to Dr. King, he wouldn't have got it. You know, really. Just a little closer to him. Stay there. Stay there. We can't afford any more losses. He had seen mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop. Always living with a threat. Dead ahead. Come on, Sam. Folks, you better stop and think. Oh, we're almost to the brain.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Many people are understandably nervous, as am I, about whether or not the dysfunction on the House Republican side will prevent us from being able to raise the debt ceiling. So a lot of people immediately turn to the discharge petition.
Pennsylvania Representative Brendan Boyle, ranking Democrat on the House Budget Committee, is looking at what is called a discharge petition to circumvent House Republican leadership if it blocks a debt ceiling increase. With 218 signatures, the petition would force a bill out of committee and onto the floor. This comes as Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warns they'll need to begin taking extraordinary measures on Thursday to keep paying the nation's bills. If the U.S. defaults, economists warn the results would be catastrophic. But the debt ceiling was raised with little fuss three times under President Donald Trump. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says the current president will not negotiate to get it done.
There's been a bipartisan cooperation when it comes to lifting the debt ceiling, and that's how it should be. That's how it should continue. It's not and should not be a political football. This is not political gamesmanship, and this should be done without conditions.
The recently formed House Subcommittee on the Weaponization of Government will be investigating big tech companies. Ohio Republican Jim Jordan, chairman of the new committee, sent letters to numerous firms asking about collusion with the Biden administration. Jessica Malugin with the Competitive Enterprise Institute says this also shouldn't be a partisan issue. Malugin says no one should feel like tech companies are censoring their speech.
When you see official government action pressuring these companies to make decisions that perhaps they wouldn't have otherwise, that's a very different thing. And then you get into a real conversation about, well, where is the line where free speech is being abridged here? Where is that line in social media?
Observers say the Twitter files, a series of emails and Slack messages recently released by Elon Musk, did not prove the conspiracies of collusion critics had charged. In honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, President Joe Biden spoke from King's pulpit at the Ebenezer Baptist Church. The president said King's legacy can act as a guiding light in these dark and divided times.
We have to choose a community over chaos. Are we the people who are going to choose love over hate? These are the vital questions of our time and the reason why I'm here as your president. I believe Dr. King's life and legacy show us the way and we should pay attention.
The Missouri House of Representatives has moved to tighten the dress code for female legislators. Spearheaded by Republican State Representative Ann Kelly, the legislation said women must wear a blazer when in the chamber. Though it was amended to include cardigans, Democrats in the House have called the legislation ridiculous. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe from Wave Farm with the Daily Radio News. The Associated Press reports that 6-decade-long radio career ended last week after 98-year-old Hong Kong DJ Ray Cordiero died. The Guinness Book of World Records claimed he was the world's longest working disc jockey. He worked at Radio Television Hong Kong until 2021. He began with Hong Kong's public broadcaster in 1960 after being employed earlier as a prison warden and bank clerk. His All the Way with Ray radio show of easy listening music was on RTHK Radio 3 for 51 years until his retirement. Quote, "The audience followed me, grew up with me, and they're all over the world now," unquote, Cordiero told the Associated Press in 2021 after his retirement. Quote, "They still listen to me on the internet," unquote. He interviewed the Beatles in 1964 and also Elton John and Tony Bennett. Here's a short clip of Cordiero being interviewed by the South China Morning Post a few years ago.
We love Uncle Ray!
Thank you. It's my 95th birthday, and coincided with my 70th anniversary in radio, and I had the best of the pop musicians on stage. They're all buddies of mine. We had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful party, wonderful evening, and raise money for our president, Santa Claus, as well. My autobiography is not finished yet, but when it's finished, I'm going to give away 100 of my autobiography at $1,000 each, and that will go to Operation Santa Claus.
Go to wavefarm.org for more radio news. Columbia County-based jazz drummer Bobby Previtt plays with Ray Anderson, and Boar, which is Maeve Charlotte and Zoots Houston, also perform on Friday, January 20th at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. WGXC will have a webcast of the entire show and will broadcast the show from 8 to 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM. Previtt is a Columbia County-based drummer and composer who has heard international praise, and Anderson has transferred Dick Griffin's multiphonic technique on the trombone to his own singing voice, enabling him to simultaneously blend several pitches to the point where he sounds like a blues-inflected Tuvan throat singer. Maeve Charlotte and Zoots Houston also perform on the show. The Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Friday, January 20th. Turn out to the Avalon Lounge or tune in a WGXC web stream and broadcast at WGXC.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Andrea Mako reports at Porcupine Soup that a Rensselaerville man is the latest local to be arrested for his part of the attempted coup in Washington, D.C. on January 6, 2021. Troy Weeks, 37, who used to live in Greenville, was arrested on January 10. He was charged with obstruction of law enforcement during civil disorder, entering or remaining in a restricted building or grounds, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds, engaging in physical violence in a restricted building or grounds, impeding passage through the Capitol grounds or buildings, and assaulting, resisting, or impeding certain officers. The criminal complaint against Weeks says in part, and I quote, law enforcement identified an individual who pushed against police and stole a can of oleoresin capsaicin spray from a police officer while located near the entrance to the U.S. Capitol, end quote. The Federal Bureau of Investigation says they found him through an Instagram account belonging to a woman with the last name of Weeks. An estimated 979 defendants have been charged so far in the attempted coup, including several from the Hudson Valley. And you can read the full story at Porcupine Soup. The Catskill Central School District Board of Education selected Melissa A. Barrow to be its next superintendent of schools at its meeting on January 11th. Barrow takes over on February 12th. Barrow said, and I quote, I am honored and excited to be selected as the next superintendent of the Catskill Central School District. I look forward to working with the board, staff, and families to continue to build upon the strengths of the district while creating new opportunities for student success, end quote. She was most recently assistant superintendent of student programs, assessment, and evaluation in the East Ramapo Central School District in Rockland County. Before that, Barrow was an instructional supervisor, then director. She boasts of increasing the graduation rate there of English language learners by 26% and recently established a high school newcomer academy to support new students as they transition to high school. Board President Deborah Johnson said, and I quote, Melissa Barrow stood out among a strong pool of candidates. Her skills, experiences, and enthusiasm make her the right person to lead Catskill CSD. The board looks forward to working with Melissa, end quote. 12 parents, staff, and community members assisted the board in interviewing 4 semifinalists for the job. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that the Catskill Advisory Group believes the 700,000-acre Catskill Park needs, and I quote, intensive management, end quote, because of so many new visitors since the beginning of the pandemic. Attendance in the park doubled between 2018 and 2021, according to the report from the group. Locally, this can be seen in the town of Hunter, where hundreds of cars illegally park along both sides of the narrow Route 23A just before Catskill Fall throughout the summer and fall. All those visitors, the report says, and I quote, has resulted in the degradation of certain natural resources, public safety hazards on mountainside roads, overcrowding at trailheads, litter, illegal camping, and more, end quote. And has, and I quote, stretched thin local services such as fire, ambulance, police, and mountain rescue teams, end quote. The group was formed in October 2020 with town leaders, local business people, and members of conservation groups to study and make recommendations about the increase in visitors. But the Department of Environmental Conservation, which manages the 700,000-acre Catskill Park, has staffing levels similar to the 1980s. The report recommends the DEC continue to use permit systems in the most crowded areas of the park and adding a small AM radio station to alert arrivals of important information. Read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits.
right? So then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
Back in LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11. Some restrictions
apply. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXE Renewable Weather Forecast for Monday, January 16th. And we start each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Stewart's Shops in Leeds has gas at $3.36 a gallon. That's the lowest, according to the Gas Buddy website. The air quality forecast is considered low on Monday, and the National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Martin Luther King Day with a high near 37 and a northwest wind 6 to 8 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Monday night should be partly cloudy with a low around 23 and a northwest wind around 6 miles an hour. Tuesday, there is a 40% chance of showers after 1 p.m. with cloudy skies, a high of 43 and a low around 34. Wednesday should be just cloudy with a high of 41 and a low around 29. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Solar-powered radio for open ears.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of David Gorin of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes, when Paris-based jazz trio The Recyclers get a hold of a synthesizer. Plus tracks from Otmar Liebert, Mary Halverson, and Chris Carter. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Signal Hill, Newfoundland. Thursday morning, December the 12th, 1901.
Sono lieto di poter rievocare, in poche parole, le esperienze delle prime trasmissioni radiotelegrafiche a grandi distanze da me felicemente eseguite attraverso l'Oceano Atlantico il 12 dicembre 1901. Queste esperienze provarono conclusivamente che la trasmissione e la ricezione delle onde elettriche non erano affatto limitate, come a quel tempo credevano tutti gli scienziati alle brevi distanze, bensì potevano essere utilizzate per le comunicazioni fra il vecchio e il nuovo mondo.
In the WGXC community calendar this week, there are all sorts of things for you to do in person, virtually all sorts of different ways. On Tuesday, January 17th, there's a NARCON training at the Hudson Area Library. They're held on the third Tuesday of each month at 10 a.m. at the Hudson Area Library. Wednesday, January 18th, the Catskill Town Board has a committee meeting, and Catskill has their meetings partnered with WGXC. They have a live web stream. If you go to WGXC.org, click on the listen button, you'll hear the meeting if you can't make it in person. It's at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, January 18th. That's the Catskill Town Board meeting at 439 Main Street in Catskill. On Friday, January 20th, the Faces of Catskill exhibition comes to the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Create Space on Main Street in Catskill. David McIntyre's portraits of Catskill locals are at the Create Gallery Fridays from 4 to 7 p.m., Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. The Sharing Public Spaces community conversation is Friday, January 20th at the Hudson Area Library at 5:30 p.m. It's a forum to discuss how Hudson's public square can be shared. Find out more about the public square in Hudson at the Sharing Public Spaces discussion, Friday, January 20th, 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Hudson Area Library. Also Friday, January 20th, Bobby Previtt and Ray Anderson perform, and also the group Boar which is Maeve Schollerit and Zoots Houston. That's at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill from 8 p.m. to 10:30. WGXC will have a live web stream and a live broadcast of Bobby Previn and Ray Anderson and the Boer Group Friday, January 20th at the Avalon Lounge. Turn out or tune in. Another turn out or tune in event is Saturday, January 21st. It's also at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. And the bands Altram, Savick, and Matt Hunter and the Dusty Fates are performing from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. It'll be live on the radio or live in person at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. That's 29 Church Street in Catskill, Saturday, January 21st. These events and many others are on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
While Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State speech addressed key issues affecting New Yorkers, some feel the solutions fell short. In her speech, Hochul spoke about building more housing to combat the housing crisis, strengthening mental health care, public safety improvements, and raising the minimum wage to combat the high cost of living. But Rebecca Garrard with Citizen Action of New York feels Hochul's solutions and their implementation miss the mark for what New Yorkers need. She cites the current housing crisis as an example.
What we heard nothing about, and what we know is desperately necessary, are increased tenant protections, such as good cause tenant protections, increased and new voucher programs that help tenants pay their rent.
Garrard adds more should have been said about investing public money into community and public housing systems. According to a 2022 report from the New York State Association of Realtors, affordability remains a barrier to home purchasing. In her speech, Hochul announced the creation of the New York Housing Compact, which will be a series of policy changes to develop 800,000 new homes across the state in the coming decade. As the state's legislative session is already underway, Garrard is optimistic about upcoming policy priorities. She feels the legislature has a solid foundation for what New York should look like for its residents. Garrard notes any package of housing legislation needs to include good cause tenant protections.
Good cause tenant protections simply say that a tenant who is following every aspect of their lease agreement cannot be evicted without cause, and there cannot be predatory rent increases that aren't associated with the cost of owning the building.
Garrard says implementing these in upcoming housing legislation could help triage the crisis. According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, 31 states and 66 localities across the country have passed good tenant protection laws. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On Tuesday, Governor Hochul delivered the annual State of the State address, outlining her priorities for the coming year. Housing, criminal justice, healthcare, and climate were some of the key issues she raised. As always, the State of State is intended to provide an upbeat message with the details and harder issues addressed in the budget proposals to come out a few weeks later. For our first segment, Mark and I are going to review some of the key points. We start with housing, which the governor has identified as her key priority for the address. Many New Yorkers are facing ongoing challenges in obtaining affordable, quality housing. Hochul called to create thousands of new units to house people with mental illness and open 1,000 hospital beds for psychiatric patients under a $1 billion plan. She wants to build 800,000 new homes over the next decade that would require doubling what was built in the last 10 years. And she plans to set housing production targets over 3-year cycles that localities would be expected to work toward or risk state intervention. So, Mark, how did housing advocates react to the governor's remarks?
Well, I should probably divide up this response. I think there's probably was more positive response to the new units to house people with mental illness. I think one of the big problems recently is we've seen a significant increase in the number of homeless individuals on the streets, and that's partly because of a lack of places to help people who previously were put into psychiatric institutions. So I think there's more positive response to the housing for the mental health. The reaction on housing in general, however, was definitely mixed. While groups certainly welcomed the governor's call to make housing a priority, The Housing Justice Royal Campaign called the plan gutless and designed to appease her wealthy donors. The group had actually, I guess they probably did protest Hochul's speech on Tuesday, but the governor locked down the Capitol to protesters and anybody else not with a formal invitation prior to a speech. The Housing Justice Group said that instead of investment in public housing, what the governor is proposing is really handouts for big developers. And instead of vouchers to help more New Yorkers afford homes, we got zoning change. Hochul's housing plan also relies on certain major assumptions. A big one is that it calls to replace the expired tax incentive known as 421.A, which provided significant property tax breaks to New York City developers who would build housing with allegedly a certain percentage of affordable units. Many lawmakers have viewed, and tenant advocates have viewed this as primarily a corporate welfare program, and they allowed it to expire last year. Hochul also assumes that probably half of the new units are units who have been built anyway, regardless of any state action. Tenant groups also were looking for reforms, particularly the good cause eviction law, which some cities like Albany have enacted, but which have been challenged in court and actually overturned initially, arguing that the cities lacked authority from the state for such protection. This law would protect tenants against unreasonable rate hikes and evictions.
So crime was a major issue in the recent elections, with Republicans and the tabloids arguing that crime in the state was out of control, driven by recent reforms, including ending the use of bail for many nonviolent offenders. Hochul's narrow victory is blamed in large part on this issue. And New York City's Mayor Eric Adams, who's a former cop, has also pushed for stronger action on crime. How did the governor respond to this?
Well, Hochul certainly has been quite defensive on the crime issue, even more so probably after the election. We've seen certainly a shift to the right. We will have a segment later about Hochul's effort to promote a conservative to be in charge of the state's highest court, which frankly seems a bit of a public relations campaign to shift the public perception of her in a more conservative direction. In her address, in terms of crime, she really played to both sides of the issue. She did say with respect to the rising epidemic of overdose deaths from opioids in the state that we need to avoid incarcerating so many people. But she refused to support safe use centers for people using such drugs, a major reform advanced by the drug policy community. She did support increasing funding to $12 million for reentry programs to help those released from prison, but she wants to triple funding to hire more prosecutors. She did not announce support for reforms such as making it easier to wipe clean criminal records to make it easier for ex-offenders to obtain jobs, something that even the business community supports. Nor did she support the proposal to make it easier for elderly prisoners, people my age, to win their freedom. Hochul also wants to partially roll back bail reforms, giving judges more discretion, eliminating a provision that's known as the least restrictive means in dealing with bail issues. The Legal Aid Society responded to the bail proposal, saying that it accomplishes nothing of value and it continues to falsely scapegoat bail reform, which only distracts from community investments and reforms like the Treatment Not Jails Act and Clean Slate.
The governor did say that climate change was the greatest threat to humanity, but mainly restated some of the goals outlined in the climate scoping plan that was finally released last month, which was 3.5 years after the state's new climate law was adopted. One of the big issues is her plan to put a price on carbon emissions through her version of cap and trade. She did announce a few initiatives to help low-income households with their utility bills and in converting to clean energy systems such as air heat pumps. How did climate groups react?
Well, as you noted, most of the ideas that she did talk about in the address were already outlined in the scope and plan that was released in December. So there really wasn't a lot of new information. Groups are certainly supportive that the governor is willing to raise revenue through some form of carbon pricing, but the details of her proposals really still are not known. Many groups, frankly, are primarily focused on trying to finally get some climate funds that could be invested in disadvantaged communities. The more progressive climate groups argue that what the state is doing, cap and invest or cap and trade, falls far short of the immediate radical action on climate that the head of the United Nations says must happen now in order to avoid climate collapse. There were certainly some disappointments. Groups were disappointed that she pushed back by a year the target date to stop using gas in new buildings, basically to 2025 rather than the 2024 that had been supported previously. She did propose something new. It was in the climate plan, but first time she said it, that by 2030, you could no longer buy a new fossil fuel, you know, heating system equipment, you know, to, you know, replace boilers or furnaces in existing buildings. That was good, though many would prefer a quicker timeline than 2030, say 2025. There was also a number of the major climate initiatives that groups were supporting that she did not announce any support for. And that big one certainly was the push to have the New York Power Authority begin to build renewable energy facilities in the state. The state has had, you know, goals for 20 years to build renewable energy, but the reality is after 5 years, 20 years, they only get about 5% of the state's energy electricity from wind and solar. You know, back on the carbon pricing issue, New York needs to raise at least $10 billion a year to fund the clean energy transition. There are a variety of proposals to accomplish this, tax the rich or, you know, impose some type of financial penalties on polluters. There's something called the Climate Superfund, which would raise $3 billion a year. So funding for climate will be a hot topic, but very unclear how and when this will actually be resolved.
Is there anything else about the governor's address or the upcoming legislative session that you'd like to share?
Well, one thing we should note is that Democrats, unlike many places in the country, are firmly controlling New York as the governor's mansion and both houses of the state legislature. However, the fight for the soul of the party is ongoing. Governor Hochul seems to be rapidly assuming the role of Governor Cuomo. She's increasingly shifting to the right and devotes considerable effort to raise enormous funds from special interests who normally expect, you know, paybacks. Legalized public corruption, unfortunately, is still a very dominant force in Albany. The Senate is likely to be the most progressive of the three, you know, parties or factions in most policy debates at the Capitol, with the Assembly, you know, sort of bridging the divide between the Senate and the governor. However, most of the power will continue to reside, you know, with the governor. One thing to note, there's been a relatively high turnover compared to historical levels among legislators in recent years. Seniority, however, continues to play a role, major role, in the division of power. Certainly, there's a lot of new, young, progressive Democrats, to a certain extent, large extent, elected by progressive groups like DSA, and they are far more willing to rock the boat than previous generations in pushing various reforms. Realistically, they still face an uphill struggle to get power, and there is certainly no sense that long-term progressive issues such as single-payer health care are anywhere close to getting support by the powers that be. As always, health care and education will be the two farthest, largest parts of the state budget. It's one area where the legislators pay the most attention. One thing I will mention is that New York's system of partial public campaign financing is starting in 2023, and it will be interesting to see whether this helps elect more independent legislators.
Thanks, Mart, for that State of the State address recap.
Thank you, Sally.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
One decision.